Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. Stone, you are back from your trip to the mountains, and I heard it was a little bit exciting.
Yeah, I'm back from the mountain trip and the bear hunt in Highlands, North Carolina. We had a visitor late one evening, and we had an opportunity to share some of our garbage as a snack with him or her, and it was a lot of fun. We captured what I call Bigfoot video on the event, in that you can hear the audio, and many of our family members found it kind of funny, but you can't really see the bear unless you know it's a bear. But we had a blast. It's beautiful. Have you ever been up there?
I have not been there for a long, long time.
You don't strike me as the outdoorsy bear.
No, I've driven through it. I've actually been there.
But I'm back and refreshed and been looking forward to this segment all week. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Soyini Koch. She's managing principal with Anona Enterprises. We're also going to talk with the team of Gary and Justine Martin. They're with Fresh Coat Painters. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to welcome to the broadcast the VP Marketing and Business Development for Hotel Equities. Please join me in welcoming Mr. Joe Reardon. Welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks for having us. We appreciate it. We appreciate you guys taking time out and letting us talk a little bit about what we do.
So why don't we start off and let you explain what you guys do?
We are we're celebrating our 25 years of being a hotel management company, and mm-hmm. we're not only a hotel management company. We actually we own, operate, and have equity, and help people develop hotels in unique markets across the United States. Exciting times for us right now as the economy is continuing to swing back, and good money in the capital markets and great supply opportunities to continue to grow in the hotel sector. So we're very excited.
Now, when you are, say, the hotel business, are you working with franchisors and buying franchises of hotels? Or are you creating your own independent hotels? How does the business work?
Yeah, that's a great question. We actually we own, operate, and help manage all type of brands. It would be mm-hmm. from Marriott's to Hilton's to Starwood's, and we actually do quite a few independent projects as well. Anything from select service hotels to high-end full-service 4-star hotels.
So now, how do you decide which brand to partner with or go independent? How do you decide on that? Is it a case-by-case basis based on the location?
Yeah, it's all market-driven. So mm-hmm. it's the demand generators that are in the market, the brands that are currently there in the market. And then we'll do our financial analysis, and you look at, say, construction costs into consideration and
right.
What brand's really missing from that market, I think, is the key.
And then you try to fill the gap.
Absolutely.
So I'm interested to talk a little bit about the recruiting and development side of your business, because your arena strikes me, I guess, maybe a little bit like healthcare. It takes a special kind of person to be in the healthcare arena, I think, and I am not it. But I would think, too, you're dealing with the public, and you have to – it's a certain type of person that really is at home in your arena. Can you speak to the recruiting, the development, the training?
Sure. It is. I think we've made the hospitality industry rocket science over the last 10 years, and we've oversimplified things. But it is. It's you're servicing people 24 hours a day at your locations, 365 days a year. We certainly look for people. We like to hire great attitude. We think we can train people to understand what our culture is and what's made us successful over the last 25 years. But it's also a very interesting business. It's something that changes day by day. I mentioned earlier, I think we're in an economic cycle right now where people just can't get a shovel in the ground quick enough to get these hotels built. Supply has been at an all-time low over the last 5 to 6 years in our industry. As the economy's coming back and markets are opening up to new construction funding, there's hotels going up everywhere, which is a good thing.
So what's the balance like if you were to look at, and I may not be using the right labels, but say tourism and business kind of folks getting accommodations? Is it pretty even, or is it a big difference in the two?
Yeah, it's a great question.
That was a fantastic question. It was a little long getting it out.
No.
That was a marvelous question.
It's how we operate our business and how we set our strategies at each asset that we own or operate. Business travel is coming back. People want to meet face-to-face now. You've got group business and convention businesses coming back, strong in markets, which we like. Which brings people to stay a couple days, spend some money in the hotel, spend some money in restaurants locally, and help the economy there. Leisure travel certainly has picked back up, but there's a little bit more, not much, but discretionary income out there where people are been pushing vacations off for the last couple years, and now people are really picking up the travel. Industry-wide, up probably 7% versus last year, which is phenomenal right now.
Mm-hmm.
We see that strong growth for the next 4 to 5 years.
So now when you're looking at a market to go into, so you're weighing what kind of business travel is available, what kind of leisure travel is available, are there parts of the country that you work in more than others, or is there parts of the world that you guys are working in right now?
Well, 25 years, we just hit international this year, so we're extremely excited.
So you have your first property international?
We do. In Costa Rica, we're working on a development project there that's just going to be absolutely fantastic.
So you're starting from scratch, or you're buying an existing property?
Yeah, it's a 9-acre on the Pacific from scratch. We're going through the master development plans fiercely right now.
That must be exciting, Todd.
It's extremely exciting. So every market's different, so we take a look at. I mentioned earlier the supply has just crept slowly over the last 5 years. Demand is at its, back to almost 07 levels, which is phenomenal. Once you see that, then you really are looking at markets that have that demand and find the right brand to put in there.
But sometimes you take an existing property and rebrand it with a different brand. Is that part of your business as well?
Absolutely. Repositioning is what we like to call
That's
it.
That's what you call it?
Yeah, we like to find an asset that's underperforming, undermanaged, that we can get in at a very good cost basis, put the right flag on there, put the right people in there with our bench strength, and really turn it around pretty quickly.
You must have some really smart folks in the back room that you're, feeding energy drinks and trail mix, because you got to get these numbers right. Like if they don't get it right in Costa Rica, if they pick the wrong place or the wrong time, I mean, that could be a pretty costly decision.
Party's over at that point. I mean,
right?
You're dealing with $40, $50 million projects. And if you don't get the right flag, to your point, and you don't have the right people in place, and quite honestly, if you don't do your homework and have the right financial analysis that says, here's your cash-on-cash return in the next 3 to 5 years, you're certainly going to be in some trouble. But we've been doing it for a while. We have certainly not me, but we have some wizards in the back that know what they're doing. And, again, we have phenomenal brand relationships. We typically think that when we find a market, we find the right investment platform that we can get the best brand in as quick as possible, and we can make those decisions quickly. So
now, is your business that you want to accumulate as many flags and as many locations as possible, or do you buy something, turn it around, and then sell it and move on to the next thing?
Good question. It continues to change in the cycle that we're in. Right now, if you're talking with brand guys like Marriott, Starwood, Hilton, their time is all spent right now on new development, so meaning ground-up construction, because the capital markets are open to that now. Because there's a lack of supply. So it's probably 50-50 right now. We probably have about, I'd say, 10 to 12 startup development projects we're working on. A couple in our backyard here. We're doing two hotels right here in the perimeter market. We think it's a phenomenal market. Our headquarters is right down the street. We're building a Hampton Inn and Suites with 5 outlet parcels. And in addition to that, an eighth of a mile up the street, we're doing a Marriott Residence Inn. So we it's all about what the right market is and the right flag. We just look for the right opportunities, and we're in a fundraising mode ourselves. So
you're looking for investors who want to invest in this type of industry?
Yeah, the time is right. So we just went fully subscribed on one of our first funds a couple years ago. We did a $35 million raise, very successful. Deployed the capital into the markets, great returns. People are signing back up for that, and then we're very close to finishing another $40 million fund that we just had some great responses out of New York last week, so we're excited about that.
So when you have a fund that you're trying to raise the money for, how do you go to the market to say, hey, we'd like to find investors. How do you find these investors?
Well, you got to tell a good story.
Right.
And we have that.
Nothing like a good track record that
exactly.
helps your story, right?
You know, brand reputation, the reputation of Hotel Equities has been around for some time. And if you call a brand today, they'll say, you know, if you're looking for a management company or someone to partner with on a project, we're certainly top one, two on that list, which we're fortunate. That's really driven from our CEO and his ability to really build a phenomenal company through Fred Cerrone. So, you know, there's a lot of investors out there right now. You want to make sure that you pick the right folks that you want to partner with. And mm-hmm. we look for a long-term marriage. We're not interested in anything that's going to be a quick turnaround within a year or two. So our platform is fairly long-term.
So you got started out as a cabana boy and worked your way up, or what's your backstory?
My background, front desk clerk, Raleigh, North Carolina, at an independent hotel. Absolutely, yeah. So grew up in Raleigh, went to North Carolina State University, never thought I'd get in the hotel business, finished with a business degree. And
even while working there, you're like, this isn't for me.
Yeah, you know. I had to wear a tie. I was uncomfortable. But, yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's the hospitality industry has changed dramatically over the last, you know, I've been in it almost 20 years. And
straight through, or did you have some detours?
Straight through. I was Marriott. I worked for Marriott International for 15 years, and then mm-hmm. I jumped out into the management side and then worked for a private equity group that raised funds and that we purchased hotels and managed them for them. So, again, our business has changed dramatically. It's just not a better time to be in the business that we're in right now. The next 4 to 5 years on development and growth of new brands and new markets across the country are just absolutely phenomenal.
So now what's the occupancy rate of a given hotel? Is it like what's the range you look for to keep at to make it so that it's profitable?
That's a great question. It's really we look at revenue per available room. So it's a mix between your occupancy and your average daily rate.
Mm-hmm.
So you know we tend to say that it's a good money building opportunity if you're running about an average of a $70 revenue per available room, $70.
So you kind of pull the market, and then if you see that number in the 70 range, you're like, hey, there's some opportunity there. Or if you see it at 60, then you're like, you know, this could be an area where we can make some money.
Yeah, and it's studying the market, understanding what, you know, what companies are in the market, what's driving the business in the market, what's the mix of businesses you mentioned earlier. Is it business? Is it leisure? You know, I think taking a look at those analytics are key. We like to find opportunities that hotels are underperforming in markets that are $70 to $80 RevPAR. That's an absolute, you can get in a good cost basis and really add value quickly with a new brand and reposition.
Now, what about all these online services that are getting me the best rate? Like, how does that play into your business?
Is that good for you?
No, it's good. I think it's always good to have another booking channel out there to be able to play from. But you got to be delicate in it. I mean, it's just very high cost of commissions. So, you know, there's certainly limited amounts of your supply that you would put out on the booking channels. We like to believe that we put the best brand in there, and mm-hmm. we have the best rate available at all times through that
brand
channel.
So you don't put every room on those things? You just carve out, like, okay, we'll put X percent of rooms on these channels, and then the rest we want to sell internally?
Absolutely. And then you want to allocate, you know, some for the booking.coms, and, you know, you want to have some for your group businesses coming in. You want to have some for your leisure travelers. And then the corporate travelers that come in midweek, obviously, staying, you know, the business traveler is going to come in on Monday, maybe leave on Wednesday. And you want to make sure you have plenty of rooms for those guys, too.
Now, is that part of your business is to kind of build relationships with big companies so that they send all the travelers your way?
It is. So, you know, every hotel has a full sales team, and we have a vice president of sales and marketing, and he has a full team of revenue managers and sales managers that really work with the individual brands. And making sure that we're tied in with the IBMers and the Ernst & Youngs, and we've got those rates locked down. And they're good negotiated rates. That's a good thing for the hotel.
So the big company wants to partner with Hotel Equities because you have multiple brands, right? So but by working with you directly, then no matter where they're at, then that helps them get a good rate?
Well,
it simplifies the process? Like, what's the benefit of working with you directly?
Yeah. Well, really, it's the benefit of, let's say, an Ernst & Young's going to work directly with that hotel. We manage that hotel in a market. Let's say it's a Marriott downtown Charlotte. We'll create those relationships in market with Ernst Young on behalf of that hotel. It really won't be a Hotel Equities negotiation
it's
across
the
country.
Right, because like they want them to pick Marriott wherever they go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So if we send our producer, Michael, to tag along with you for a week, what are some of the things that he might see? What is your day and your week look like as VP of development?
It's busy. Again, it's we're in a good cycle, so you can't answer the phone quick enough, which is good, in trying to find people, the right brands in the right locations. But, a typical example would be next week. We'll take off to we got a call last week on a conference center up in Philadelphia. They need some help running the asset, and we'll go in and we'll take a look at that, and they quickly want to put us into play. They're just not making money, and they want to rebrand and reposition. That's a good opportunity.
So turnarounds are – you're looking for turnaround opportunities?
We're not out there 100% looking at them, but when they come to us, it's even better. So right. So we'll do that, and then we'll take off up to Connecticut right from Philly next week, and we'll
you
go.
You better go to Costa Rica.
Costa Rica is the week after.
Right, you better fit that in. Every Michael's quarter, I try to be going to Costa Rica.
August the 4th, pack your bags. We're out of here. So,
do you do radio station turnarounds? We can talk about that after
you
the
guys
show.
Are smarter than me on that. I can tell you that. No, not at all.
What's next for you, man?
I don't know if we have a magic number of 100 hotels. We're at 52 today, mm-hmm. And they're very, very strong brands and markets. We'll probably be 75 by the end of next year, without a doubt.
Wow.
We want to really grow in the right markets with the right people and find the right partners to do business with. I think that's the key. We're not interested in volume. We're interested in good partnerships. They create, good equity for everybody that's involved. I think that's the key.
So do you think there'll be another fundraise after this one closes?
Absolutely. Without a doubt. It's we've got some additional partners and investment groups that we've just signed on with that are really going to take us to that next level. We've really grown from more of the select service assets that we manage now into developing full service, 4-star, getting really deep into DoubleTrees, full-service Marriott's, resort-type properties.
So you're going kind of deeper within those brands
than you
had historically?
Absolutely. Yeah, really coming. I mean, we have a $52 million Marriott Residence Inn in development right now. We're building from ground up in Miami Beach, Surfside. Maybe we can take
there
you on
go.
That trip as well.
That's a good one.
I smell remote broadcast. One in Costa Rica, one down in Miami.
That'd be great. I'd love to do that with you guys.
So where can some of these potential investors, investing groups, and other people that need to have a substantive conversation with somebody like you or somebody on your team, what's the best way for them to reach out and learn more?
They can call me directly at hotelequities.com. You'll see the website there, and my information is certainly on the website there. It's Jay Reardon at hotelequities.com, and we'd love to talk with anyone who's interested in investing into a great hotel space right now.
And the website, hotelequities.com, will give them a lot of information?
It'll give you everything that you can imagine. Go to the development site, and that's where all of our information is.
Well, congratulations, 25 years. That's impressive.
We're blessed. So thank you so much for having us today.
Well, hey, it's been an absolute delight having you in the studio, man. This is exciting time for you guys.
It is. And we appreciate you guys allowing us to come in and tell a little bit of our story. And we wish you guys success as well going forward.
All right. Well, we are delighted to do it. Listen, you going to hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Wouldn't miss it.
Okay, next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us from Anona Enterprises, the managing principal, Mrs. Soyina. I've practiced this.
You had the first name, right?
Morning.
This is the easy name.
Soyini Coke. Welcome to the show, Soyini.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, managing principal, what all do you have to manage?
Well, what we do is we work with clients that are typically $5 to $50 million in annual revenues to help them figure out how to make more money. So in doing that, I'm managing a team of consultants who are going out and doing analysis and legwork and research to help our clients in that regard. And then I'm managing client relationships and also now managing a pretty full schedule of speaking engagements as well.
So now when you're working with a business owner that's a $5 million business owner, do they ever go, you know what, I'm good here. I just want to be at $5 million. Or does everybody want to put the pedal to the floor to just grow?
90% of folks are looking for growth. I find that most business owners are type A, go-getter type people. That's the reason why we have businesses in the first place.
Right.
And so we're always looking for the next opportunity, the next way to fulfill whatever vision it was or dream it was that had us start our business in the first place. Every now and then you do meet a business owner who is interested in maintaining a lifestyle business.
Uh-huh. But that's not a $5 million business typically.
Depends on your lifestyle.
It depends. It does depend on your life. Right. It depends on your profit margin as well, right? Uh-huh. Some industries are very profitable, and so you can be generating, you know, potentially twenty percent margin off of the $5 million, which is $1 million in profit a year, which is, you know, good for most people.
Right. So now, how do you find these business owners?
Wonderfully, most of my businesses come from referral, and we've been around for over 10 years now, and. Great referral network of trusted advisors. So other people who are interacting with
CPAs or lawyers or
CPAs,
something like that.
Financial advisors, transaction lawyers, some very high-end business coaches and leadership coaches and things like that will see the kinds of issues that we work with our clients on and then refer them to us.
But are you doing coaching or you're more business consulting?
No coaching. What typically happens
is... Time out. I don't even understand the difference. What is the difference between coaching and consulting?
Your hourly rate?
No, I mean, I some coaches get paid a tremendous amount of money, so I wouldn't say that. I work with them personally. Uh-huh. On their personal growth and development, whether or not it's leadership or, in some cases, sales skills. And you can see a coach as being the person who's in that CEO's ear, encouraging them, giving them direction, giving them advice, and giving them counsel. A consultant is going to be a team or a group of people who actually will a particular issue and then create a scope of work. Mm-hmm. And then partner with that CEO to address or come up with a solution for that specific issue, typically.
Can you share an example of how that plays out in real life? Like, what's an issue that a business owner would work with you on?
Absolutely. One issue is, for example, I have a client who is in a healthcare business who works with medical facilities, and he was looking to increase his footprint specifically in Georgia. So what we did was we analyzed the market and developed a really clear understanding of where the holes in the market were, where the opportunities were, and got down to a list of specific facilities or specific types of facilities that this particular company could go after, and then we worked with them to help them close that business. And so there was a clear pot of gold at the end of the rainbow in that particular client engagement.
And then so you kind of draw the map of, okay, this is where the opportunity lies, and you're actually saying, okay, this, you got to call the owner of this company and you help them every step of the way? Or do you just give them this kind of overarching plan and say, okay, good luck, let me know how this goes?
That depends a lot on what the individual CEO or client actually wants. Some clients actually have an infrastructure. They have a team in place. Mm-hmm. And so they want the big strategic thinking. They want the answer, and then they want their team to go out and actually execute the solution. And then in other cases, the CEO may not have that infrastructure in place, or their infrastructure may be tied up on other business initiatives for the company. And so they would need the additional support from us in order to be able to execute. Because one of the important philosophies, I think, especially in serving this market, the small, medium-sized business market, is there really needs to be a clear return, a clear economic benefit to consultative services like the kind that Annona provides. Most companies do not want some big academic exercise that sits in their desk drawer. Right, they really want some sort of transaction, some sort of economic, real hardcore profit revenue generated out of the work that we do, and we're very clear about that.
Now, do you find that a lot of business owners, at least initially, tend to resist having a documented, rigorous strategic plan or investing the time to commit one to paper? Do you find they're resistant at first?
I think so. And a number... In our case, a number of clients will come to us having already been sold on the process by the trusted advisor who is referring them.
That's a nice deal there. So you've cultivated relationships with trusted advisors that can go ahead and grease the skids a little bit for you and say, you really need this, now go talk to Soyini.
Yes, exactly. But before that happens, I do find that, yes, business owners are busy. they have a whole host of things to do, including fires to put out.
Right. It seems counterintuitive to stop what you're doing to plan what you're going to do.
Absolutely. But planning pays. We found that it's powerful, practical, and profitable. But you
and it's just a coincidence they all start with P.
Right. Absolutely. Just a coincidence. The thing is, though, that we have to use planning effectively. It's an opportunity for us to bring together our own creative energy, the best thinking of our team, the best thinking of our trusted advisors, market intelligence, to address whatever our most pressing issue is in our business at any given time. But in order to do that, we do have to pause. And I think the average business owner doesn't really see how to use planning in that surgical, incisive, really effective way. And that's something that, you know, as I mentioned before, we're really committed to making sure that people use planning in a way that delivers results.
So now when you're working with a new client, how do you, or what stage of pain are they at? Are they at the point of, hey, it would be great if I could do blank. Let me work with this firm in order to help them achieve that. Or are they like hurting where like something bad's happening and they got to fix something?
It's either or. Most of the time, though, there is a specific issue that the business owner is really tackling with, like a big sitting at their desk, something sitting in the pit of their stomach that they can't really figure out how to deal with. They need to grow their business in the next 2 to 3 years because they need to sell their business in order to retire. And it's not quite where it needs to be in terms of valuation. They want to get $5 million or $10 million more out of the company. And they're not really sure how to get there.
Right.
They may want to enter a new market. Some of my clients are physician groups or physicians who have invented medical devices. They want to know how to get that medical device into the market. That's not necessarily a bad problem to have, but it is a very specific issue.
Right. And they may not have the skill set to execute on that just because they're doctors or people in this industry, right?
Absolutely. Or they may not have the time.
Right.
If a business owner is even looking to expand inside their industry, they may not have the bandwidth on their existing team to be able to do the legwork to get the market intelligence and put together the strategy that they need.
So can you walk us through what the engagement looks like? Here, my attorney says, I should call you. I call you up. Now I'm on the phone with you. What questions are you asking me?
So the first question is, well, tell me a little bit about the specific issue that brought you here. And if it's something like, well, I'm looking to enter a new market, then I'll find out about the market that they want to enter, the work that they've already done. So in many cases, especially if it's something that's been an aspiration for the business owner for a while, they may have already done some legwork. And so we want to make sure that we capture the intelligence that's already been generated inside the business owner's organization on the particular issue that we're looking at. So we'll just do some discovery. And so once we get some discovery done and we understand exactly what the parameters are of the issue, then the next thing to do is to scope out and develop a methodology for how we're going to get the client or get the business owner the answer to the question that they want. And there's some very specific tactics that we use. Some of it is, you know, primary research, so talking to the market. Some of it is secondary research. A lot of what we do is financial analysis. So we will go out and understand the assumptions that underlie the financial performance, let's say, of a new market that the client wants to enter or the device that the physician has invented. And we'll do the financial analysis to understand, well, what needs to happen in order for this particular venture to be a success.
So how flexible can and should a business plan be? Because you got to build in some room to pivot a little bit, right? But yet you still have to have some rigor and discipline or you're not going to really accomplish much with it, are you?
Absolutely. The methodology that we use, the thing that I think is best, is to do what we call scenario planning. And it's, you know, having a best case, a worst case, and an expected case for the financial performance of whatever it is that we're going into. So we'll sit down once we've run our numbers. We have a case that we think is the most likely. Then we'll have a case where it's like, okay, this is really bad. And this is kind of the minimum that you need in order to perform. And then we'll have, well, you know, this is an absolute home run. And within those, the most important thing is to understand what needs to happen in order for the company to perform. So there are specific performance metrics that we try to distill out of every single engagement. And then we give those to the client and say, here's what you need to do if you want the results that you said that you wanted when you engaged us.
So when you develop a plan, it's important to have these milestones and these kind of objectives along the path and not just focus at the end. You have to kind of have the steps, the baby steps to get to where you want to go.
Both the baby steps and then also what we call assumptions. And so, for example, let's say that you're looking at building a hotel.
Right.
And you
in
have,
Costa Rica, hypothetically.
Right, in Costa Rica. And you have your one key assumption is that your revenue per occupied room or whatever it was, right? So there's a, and that needs to be in the 70 range.
Right.
Well, you know that if you go into the market and it ends up in the 60s, then you're going to have problems. So that becomes a performance metric that the business owner who may be building this hotel has to manage. And so in every case, there are going to be a few of those, typically not more than four or five, that are going to determine the success of the venture. And we make sure that we bubble those up to the top and we give those to the CEO and say, okay, you need to.
Like these are the dashboard you got to look at.
Exactly.
Pay attention to these four key numbers.
Yeah.
And those are the drivers of the whole thing.
Exactly. So you got these five, you get these five right, you're golden.
You're almost there.
Yeah.
Right?
If you miss these, then you're going to have problems.
Right. Because I guess that's a mistake that entrepreneurs make is they focus on maybe the wrong numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Exactly. They focus either on the wrong numbers or they may not know the tolerances. They may not know that you're going to be good if you come in the 70s. Obviously, if you're better than that, then it's a home run. But how far can you be off? Would 50 be okay? Would 60
right.
be okay? So knowing kind of what those minimums are that'll determine the parameters for the success of the venture is something that. And then also another thing is validating. You know, where did that data come from? If it came from, you know, your friend or it came from somebody who kind of overheard in a conversation, that may not be the most reliable data off of which to base your business plan.
Right.
So I suspect that you rarely have the luxury of doing this kind of planning right out of the box with a brand new business with a clean slate. You more than likely are coming into an existing operation and maybe some things haven't been managed as well as they should have been. So you also have to build in some, I don't know, recovery time or recovery process into this as well, don't you?
It's never too late to plan. I think that we can stop because the thing about it is those assumptions that are driving the success of any business are there whether or not we're aware of them. And they're there whether or not we're managing them. So if you are in the middle kind of trying to catch the train while it's already moving, then there's some very simple planning exercises that are not the 30-page or the 70-page or the 100-page
business
plan.
Well, that's the thing I think that people get intimidated by.
Yeah.
You know, what is the cost I'm going to have to pay in terms of not focusing on my business while I develop this plan?
She's got a 90-second plan. Tell them about the 90-second.
You have a 90-second plan?
Absolutely.
All right, set the clock. See if this is really 90 seconds.
The way it works is that we sit down with the business owner and we distill their strategic thinking, their business plan, if you will, down into something that they can communicate in 90 seconds. What we've found is that if it pops, if it's something that can just roll off their tongue, like it's going to be this and this, and we need to have a RevPAR of 70, and they know exactly what it is, and they can say it in a very, you know, blurb it out, then that's probably something, a plan that's been very well thought through.
Mm-hmm.
If they struggle with either the key points or with communicating them, then that's an area that we know we need to dig a little bit deeper in. In developing the 90-second business plan, we get a clear window into what gaps in their strategic thinking need to be filled. The ones that are okay, where everything's handled, we don't address those. The places where there are gaps, then that's an indication that we can do a little bit further analysis.
And then do you have any tips for people who want to grow revenue?
In terms of growing revenue, what we've found from our perspective, any number of methodologies and approaches, from our perspective, from the strategic standpoint, it's really about having a clear understanding of the market and having market intelligence around where the demand is, where the nascent demand is. And so if you want to grow your revenues quickly, the thought is to find people who want what you have.
And right. Well, that sounds easy.
Find people who want what you have that nobody else is talking to. The subtlety comes in how you do that.
Right.
And what we found, the best way to do that is actually talking to the market. So going and finding customers who you may not have spoken to before, or prospects who you haven't spoken to before, and actually talking to them about what they want.
So don't try to sell them anything, just try to learn.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Now, how would you, like, say you have a restaurant and you sell hamburgers. How do you know what the price should be? Like, is it better to be the highest price, or is it better to just sell in volume at a lower price?
It depends a lot on what end of the market that you're in. If you're at Flip Burger, for example.
Right. Like, you can spend $20 on a hamburger there.
Very different pricing strategy than, you know, the big box McDonald's right. of the world. The best thing that we've found is testing. And this is why the whole planning and scenario building exercise is really important. You know, this is once again engaging the market. Let the right. market tell you what the price should be.
Like, because there might be enough people that are willing to pay $20 for a hamburger out there
in Sandy Springs, but right, maybe on my side of the tracks.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
And so, that's where you help your, because I'm sure pricing is an important component for a lot of people's business. Like, as a consultant, you know, you can get a consultant for X and you can get it for Y and Z, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You can get it for
well, you can go, there's
for
a lot
10X.
Of,
you can get a consultant for 10X.
Well, and there's some consultants that say, you know what? I'm going to be part of the solution, so I want a piece of the value I provide and not get paid a rate.
Yeah, that is the case as well. In terms of pricing, though, you know, the Flip Burger versus the McDonald's example, as I mentioned before, in the whole revenue market dynamics, competitive marketplace, the most important tool that we found is actually engaging the market, whether or not that's through some sort of survey, testing, market research, secondary research. Let the market tell you what the answer should be.
Rather than just kind of tell the market this is what it is and then deal with it.
Exactly.
And you have to be able to pivot if the market tells you. They might tell you something and then reality might tell you something else.
Exactly. So very limited pilots are great tool in that regard. So you know how much money you're going to spend,
right?
And you say, this is the information we need. We're going to put this out there, and then you adjust, but you've capped your risk.
Right.
And that once you've capped your risk and you understand the cost of that particular pilot, it's just something that goes as a part of your budget.
And this should be part of your business, no matter what initiative you try, right? It's pilot, test, let the market tell you things, and then learn, and then
a fundamental philosophy of strategic planning and planning in general. I would agree.
So before we wrap, I want to go back to this. This whole trusted advisor thing really fascinates me, because it seems like, and I'm sure it took quite an investment of time and energy to cultivate these relationships. But I like the idea of me as a business owner. I'm already engaging with a CPA or an attorney, and they're trying to treat me holistically, right? They're saying, okay, we've done your taxes, we looked at your money, you really need to be thinking through your strategic plan, Stone, based on what you've told me about the way you want to grow your business, and I want you to now talk to Soyina. Tell me a little bit about how you cultivated that network of trusted advisors, and then you must do the same thing. You must turn around and refer people to them. Can you speak to that for a moment before we wrap?
It's interesting. As we go forward, especially with the proliferation of social media, I think that trust is going to become a very, very critical currency, and trust and reputation.
Right.
And in terms of how I've gone about building my reputation and building the network of trusted advisors, it started off with my background. So I came into the game with some pretty powerful tools. I graduated from Harvard undergrad, and then I went to work for McKinsey in New York, large consulting firm. And then I was in South Africa for a year. So when I came out to start my own practice, I had some automatic street cred.
Right.
And from those relationships, especially a few of the McKinsey relationships, I started getting clients and doing good work and serving people and trying to also, in addition to being of service, because that's where it comes from. Once we've done good work and people know that the sincere motivation is to create value for clients and to be of service, then things kind of move forward from there. And it's not only just being of service to my clients, but then also being of service to my network as well. So the reciprocity in being a trusted advisor, I think, is incredibly important as well.
So is that where you spend most of your marketing time, is to cultivate those relationships?
Yes, absolutely.
So good work, it seems to be the theme. It's an excellent sales tool.
Good work.
And then making a genuine investment in the market, the community, the profession consistently is obviously a good foundation. Yeah, fantastic. Where can our listeners go to learn more?
The company website is www.annonaenterprises.com, A-N-N-O-N-A, Enterprises with an S.com. And you can find out more about me and my background on LinkedIn. And spelling of my name is Soyini, S-O-Y-I-N-I, and my last name is Coke, like the drink.
That's the part I'm good. I'm just going to call you Soy Coke because I know I keep butchering the pronunciation. But it's been an absolute delight having you. I wonder if there wouldn't be some wisdom. I think you could make for a really neat segment. I'd like to have you come in with one or more of these trusted advisors. I'd
right.
like to dive
to do
into
like
this.
A trusted advisor
segment
where we can talk about how that kind of helps each other. You create that win-win opportunity all around, because I think that's an important lesson for business owners, is to cultivate those kind of relationships and partnerships where everybody's trying to help each other.
I have the perfect people for that, so I would absolutely love that. I would be delighted.
All right, well then we'll make that happen. Hey, listen, hang out with us. We got one more two more folks, but one more interview that we're about to do. You gonna hang with us?
Certainly.
All right. We now have with us, Lee, the team, Gary and Justine Martin with Fresh Coat Roswell. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning. So what did you guys learn out of that last segment? What did you learn, Gary?
More planning.
More planning. You got to go home and write something down. Huh? But we know Justine's the brains of the outfit. How about you? What'd you think
of
that? A lot.
I really enjoyed both of you guys. Very valuable information.
So now, Fresh Coat Roswell, what are you guys doing for folks? I'm assuming Roswell is your area.
To sum it up, painting done right, professional painting. We not only service Roswell, we also service Vinings, Dunwoody, Sandy Springs, and Mountain Park.
Now, is this your own business or is franchise?
Franchise.
And how did you choose Fresh Coat as opposed to just going to the paint store?
I actually knew one of the owners in Marietta of Fresh Coat, and he gave me some advice about buying it, and then I liked what the concept that they had. They were bringing professionalism to painting.
Do you have any painting experience?
He does now.
In the past, I've rehab houses and done construction work, but I also, it's more of a customer service job for us. What we're delivering is quality painting,
right?
And I hire quality painters.
Because I would imagine, I mean, I have my own home, so we have had painting done numerous times.
Never by you.
Never by me. So I'm a prime prospect for you. But it's a dice roll. You know, you go to just an independent subcontractor.
That's, you're absolutely right.
You know, and
that's
kind of, you're nervous every time you take the plunge with the independent person.
With us, we'll come in and actually do a quote
right.
and give you a detailed written quote of what it's going to cost for ceilings, walls, trim.
Right. They're usually good with the quotes. It's the finishing,
following
the
up,
finishing
right.
up on time part is where they break down.
So we'll come in, we'll actually meet with the painters the first day. We walk them through, and we'll walk them through the job, and then we're inspecting. We're providing that quality. We're managing the paint job for you.
So you're the person I'm going to be yelling at, right?
Absolutely.
I probably won't have to yell at you. But that's where the buck stops. That's what I'm paying for when I work with you guys, right?
Right, exactly. I'm not hoping. I'm telling my painters, you know, I want to fix the problem before you have to tell me
exactly.
about it.
Exactly. Well, that's refreshing. So were you doing something else before you got this franchise?
I had a number of rentals and rehab houses. And then before that, I worked for Hewlett Packard for 31 years.
Okay, so you had a corporate job for
a
period
departure.
Of time.
Yeah.
From Hewlett Packard to, wow.
So now, was this the first time you purchased a franchise?
Yes, it is.
So how was that experience?
Interesting.
Because you could have picked anything, right?
You're a politician next.
Yeah. Number of different things. Actually, I liked how they worked their way through it, because they had the same corporate mentality that I saw at Hewlett Packard.
Uh-huh.
It's a pretty much a family experience type of thing where they you share. We're always in contact with the other franchisees throughout the nation. there to help you and guide you through trying to deal with some of this stuff. And then along with that, they've got a very good software package about how to do quotes and how to maintain quality.
Mm-hmm. So, now, did you were you looking at only kind of painting because of your rehab background, or were you looking at like a restaurant or an ice cream shop?
Well, one of the things that clued
yogurt
me
tot,
in,
right?
Yeah,
like a yogurt shop in every corner.
Well, you got a bunch of people, baby boomers that are retiring. They're trying to sell their houses.
Right.
There's going to be a big market for painting and bringing.
I know
the
a guy that has
there.
Some hotels that probably need some painting.
That's true too. I'll give him a card before we leave.
So I got to ask about the family business kind of angle, because that's got to be different too. Speak to that a little bit, if you will.
I worked, you know, obviously I raised Justine, and I wanted to bring her up with the customer service background. I've always been customer service oriented, especially with the companies I came from. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's one of the things you lack sometimes when you go out today, is seeing good customer service quality. You know, it's like, here you are, go away. I don't want that. I want to deliver, you know, I'm here to provide a quality service. Justine has that mentality. She's been bred with it. So I figured, you know, it was a good opportunity to bring her on, let her start her own company, or help start the company so she can grow in the future.
So now let's talk a little bit about Fresh Coat. You mentioned that customer service is an important component, but you also have a relationship with Sherwin-Williams.
Yes,
right?
They're one of our biggest vendors. So we can actually, in case that there's an issue with the paint or whatever, we can actually call Sherwin-Williams, bring them out as a rep.
Okay,
and
they're
get
very
advice
involved.
From us.
And that's a high-end paint, right? And that's an
yes.
important, because quality is important as well, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So that's major credibility. So tell me about the 333 pledge.
All right. You want to talk a little bit about that?
All right, Justine.
So the first three, we will give you a call back within 3 minutes or answer your call within 3 minutes. The second, once we've actually scheduled the quote, we will deliver the actual written quote within 3 days, do our best. And then once you've accepted your quote, we will schedule the job within 3 weeks.
Wow.
So 333.
So you can knock this out.
Yeah.
So this doesn't have to be like a half a year project painting your house.
Well, how many times do you call a painter?
No, that's
and,
where
and
they
you
break
leave
down.
A, you,
right.
you leave a message and you never get a
call
back. Get
a call back, right.
Here you're going to talk to a person right away and they'll schedule the quote.
Right.
Almost immediately, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
So recruiting, training, and deploying people, because they're out there representing you and some of your, you know, very right. highly credible vendors that are not going to be your vendors anymore if you're not out there, you know, representing them well. What is that process like, getting good painters that are going to represent Fresh Coat properly?
Well, we do background checks. Uh-huh. We are fully insured, licensed, and bonded. So we do the same for our painters. We don't just hire anybody off the street.
Right.
We have a pretty rigorous interview process, I'd say.
Yeah, I would think you would have to, because, you know,
your
reputation is on mm-hmm. is on the line there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And that's yeah. back to us going, you know, when we do the quote, we're actually back there the next day or the first day that the
right.
painters are there, and then throughout the job.
So now, do you work a lot with like real estate agents? Do you have like Soini was saying earlier, like these kind of trusted partners.
That's the
that
network we're trying to develop mm-hmm. at this point.
Yeah, Soini will build you a little mafia.
90 seconds.
A little referral mafia.
Right?
Exactly.
90 seconds. That's all this takes to plan out this thing. So now, who would be your these advisors or partners that would work with you and refer back and forth? Would it be real estate? I'm assuming it's real estate.
Real estate agents, designers, mm-hmm. you know, different areas. It's funny where you get things. We go through Porch. We've gone through Home Advisor and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to build up our Google
AdWords
and
because online's probably important nowadays, right? Social
absolutely.
Media.
Branding
yes.
on social media.
Right.
Yeah.
Does corporate help you, the franchisor?
Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Where are they based?
Cincinnati, Ohio.
And you said there's one other one here in Georgia?
There's Marietta, there's Alpharetta. We cover the triangle above Atlanta.
Now, do you guys play nicely together? Or
yes, we do.
So
in fact, we're having lunch together.
Yeah, okay. So you can get together in person or get on the phone and kind of help each other out. Because I'm sure you run into stuff and say, oh, well, here's how we handle
well,
that.
Well, that's back to we have this circle that we can do an email to generate to everybody in the nation and say, how did you paint this, you know, and how are you doing this kind of work, or what's this job entail?
Now, how important is this, you know, getting that flow of customers? How do you just, because once you paint something, aren't you done now for a few years? Like, you don't get repeat business.
It's trying to get more development and more word of mouth. Right. And it's a quality of paint. The more quality you do, the better you're going to get
but
more customers.
But once you paint someone's house, you're not going to see them for a while, right? Like a year, 2 years?
We might email them again, and then you never know. They might want to change the colors anyway.
And in your neighborhood, they paint the lake house, and then they paint the mountain house, and it just goes on and on. Right.
And then once you find that kind of person you trust, then you kind of stick with them.
And we also run a special where if you refer two people and they get something painted, you actually get a free room.
Oh, wow.
So that's always a nice incentive for customers.
Right, you don't have to paint the whole house. You might just go in and do a room, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So if somebody went to learn more, website for you guys? Do you have your own Facebook page? What
it's
do you guys got?
www.freshcoatroswell.com.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have a Facebook page.
Just probably look up Fresh Coat Roswell on Facebook.
And there's also a link on our website. So.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thank you for having us.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.